Man, I wish summer would just get here.
Seriously.
It keeps messing with us. We had what seemed like a spring and summer week last week, and all of a sudden now we got reports of snow and rain in the forecast. I mean, it's been snowing over the mountain pass like the last day and a half
I
or
mean,
so.
I woke up to a Facebook post from a friend that lives up in Tahoe, and it looked as if we were living in Christmas again.
Yeah, my mom's not a huge fan of snow, but like she can get through the winter. But once we get to May, she's pretty much done with it. And I got a text from her a couple days ago, like if I wake up to more snow, I'm gonna lose it. So I don't know what she's done up there, but I'm afraid to go back up to Tahoe to see what she's done. But yeah, hopefully summer comes back around. But welcome to the show. Happy to be here. Happy to be with you, Sean Cloud, back on the board.
Woo!
And a lot of fun going on, a lot of fun stuff to talk about.
Lots of sports
I
going
mean,
on.
yeah, playoffs galore. We'll talk about that. Obviously, the NBA draft lottery just occurred, so we know what the draft order will be now for the NBA. We'll talk about that as well. But we're going to start where we always start. Where else could we start? But right here in the biggest little city. Because there's
Home sweet home.
a lot of fun going on right now. Yeah, home sweet home. That's right, Sean. Let's talk about some PAC baseball because Nevada ended their regular season with a win here at home against Pacific, winning 9-2 and ending their season on a four-game winning streak. Talk about a way, if they don't make the playoffs, or at least the conference tournament, heck of a way to go out with four straight wins. They did manage to record 11 hits in the game, but scored three of their nine runs on wild pitches.
Oh, right, I remember this. I ran
Yeah,
that game.
they got some. I was gonna say you were on the board. You should remember this, Sean. But you have a lot going on. So that's and plus this is all the way back on Tuesday.
It
So
was an interesting, like you said, three runs scored on wild pitches. It was very interesting to see that because every time it happened, there'd be a laugh going on from the stands, being like, "Oh, this is happening
well,
again."
and one thing that if you ever listen to a Nevada baseball broadcast, you know that every time a runner gets to third, Mr. Ramey tells you how many wild pitches the pitcher has that year. I feel like whenever he reads that off, either that batter or the next batter, we get a wild pitch. So the fact that we got three, Matt Clayton got home in the second, Caleb Foster got home in the sixth, and then Joshua Zamora got home in the seventh, all on wild pitches. So when you can put six runs on the board with your own bats and get help like that from the pitcher, it's just going to make your day a whole lot easier.
No, the wild pitches also got them to second and third, I believe.
Yeah,
At
runners
least
did
on
move
one of
up.
them or two of them, because there was a lot of wild pitches in that game. I mean, a lot.
And this gives Nevada a final regular season record of 29-24. So they did finish with a winning record overall, but they are 14-16 in the conference. Currently, they are sitting in that fourth and final spot, but that could change should San Jose pick up wins against Air Force this weekend. And it would be a bit of a bummer should Reno be hosting the Mountain West tournament and Nevada doesn't get in.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. It's only if either team sweeps each other, right?
That's correct.
So as long as
Because
one.
right now, the first game, I believe, was yesterday, and San Jose State won, which brought them within one game of Nevada. So I think San Jose State has to sweep Air Force in order to get that spot. If Air Force can get one game, I think that gives Nevada that fourth and final spot in the tournament. That's what I understand.
Hopefully that's true because we just need that one win.
Go ahead, actually, if you can, Sean, go to Google and go to Mountain West. Search Mountain West scores. Let's see if they're playing yet, and if they are up or down right now, because that series is going on yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So by Saturday night, if not Sunday morning, we'll know for sure whether or not Nevada is going to be playing in that tournament. And as Sean looks that up, fingers crossed that Nevada does get in. Like I said, it'd be a bit of a bummer if they weren't able to participate in the Mountain West tournament happening here at home. What we got, Sean?
I'm just getting a baseball standings right now. I'm trying to find
Go
it.
ahead and click on San Jose State from that screen.
As of right now, San Jose State is still behind, like you said.
Yep. Feel like we should have some kind of like Jeopardy
You have to
theme
go
music or
all the way
something.
down to the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay, so they play today at 1.
So they're probably
Mountain
underway
time.
right now. So we'll see what comes of that game, but again, that last game is tomorrow, and that'll be the deciding factor on whether or not Nevada baseball gets into that Mountain West tournament. And that could be huge because really, I think winning that tournament is going to be their last chance to really get into the NCAA tournament. And to have it here at home, I mean, that would be huge. Be huge, even if it's the fourth seed, just to be able to compete in that kind of a tournament here at home would be huge for your confidence, to have that kind of support. You have the score?
Yeah, so as of right now, bottom of six, Air Force is up 6-3.
There we go. So Air Force is the should Air Force win this game? I think that gives Nevada the spot. So that'll be exciting. We'll keep an eye on that throughout the show and see how that goes. But Nevada softball is getting their postseason underway. They're taking part in the NISC tournament, which is equivalent to kind of the softball version of the NIT, in that it's not the official NCAA tournament, but it is a postseason tournament to still take part in. And Nevada is hosting a regional of that tournament with Loyola Marymount, Fresno State, and UC Riverside here in Reno. Yesterday, Fresno beat UC Riverside 18-10, which is not a day for any pitching coach to write to call home. I don't think anybody writes home. The expression is that's not something to write home about. I don't think anybody does that anymore. So I don't think it wouldn't be anything to call home about or even text home about.
Or type home about.
Yeah, you can say that too. But no one on that pitching staff, either pitching staff, is going to be bragging about that game. Then after that, Nevada able to beat Loyola Marymount 4-3 in a grinder. Dallas Millwood led the team with two RBIs. Kenzie Goins and Alyssa Mendez also had an RBI on the day. UC Riverside will play Loyola Marymount. Loser of that game will be eliminated. And then Nevada will play Fresno State later today for the right to play in, I believe, the regional championship for that tournament, which should be a lot of fun. If you haven't gotten out to support the softball team, this weekend would be a great time to do so because they're playing hard right now. So it'd be fun to get out there and show them some support. And speaking of somebody fighting for some playoff life, the men's golf team hung in there in their regional competition down in Athens, Georgia, but the pack just missed the cutoff with the top five teams going to the national championship. Nevada finished seventh in a tight contest. They almost managed an individual, though. So out of all the regionals, the top five teams would go, and the top individual from a team that did not qualify would get to go on to the national championship. And Stephen Osborne almost got there for Nevada. He met Billy Tom Sargent, which just sounds like, to me, for some reason, like a 1960s actor.
Well, is he a natural sergeant, or is that his last name?
That's his last name.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but
his name
is Billy Tom Sargent.
Right, that is like a 1980s, 1990s.
Yeah, right? Like, I feel like that's the guy who's just going to play every cop or detective in every movie.
I feel like he should be a Major Payne.
Yeah. but Osborne and Sargent met in the playoff round for that individual spot. It took three holes to settle it after the two men parred the first hole and bogeyed the second hole. Sargent was able to close it out in that third playoff hole. So unfortunately, that means the season for the men's golf team has come to an end, but they went down fighting, which is all you can ask of a team to do. So congratulations to that team. Great season. And the track and field team is going to try and keep their season going, as we are just under a week away from the NCAA West preliminaries. So you have West and Eastern preliminaries, and the top certain finishers in each event will then go on to the national championship meet, which is not going to be at Eugene for the first time in, I don't think it was there last year either, but it's going to be quite a while because they're obviously what's the word I'm trying to say, Sean? Help me out.
I'm trying to think of it right now.
Gosh. This is why we're on radio.
Rebuilding. We're just going to call it rebuilding.
Renovations.
Revamping.
My gosh. I don't know why I couldn't think of that. They're making renovations to make it a legit, like, Olympic-style track and field stadium. It's going to look beautiful when it's all done.
I was thinking of reservations.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't think of the word either. It makes me a little embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed.
But that's all right. That's why we're on the radio. You can't see us. We sound like idiots, but, you know, you can't see us, so what's it matter? this whole thing has gone off the rails.
All right, let's go back to it.
That preliminary round starts this coming Thursday, May 23rd in Sacramento, California. Now let's talk about a team that's going through some struggles. Because the Aces are...
Some?
Yeah, trying to be nice here, Sean.
Nine-game losing streak.
Almost. It's eight games right now.
Going to be nine after tonight.
Oh, where's the confidence?
I don't
Sean?
Have confidence.
Where's the confidence?
You get three or four runs in like the first inning, then you don't let anything happen, and then the fourth inning you just let eight or nine runs go off, you know, and you don't replace the pitcher until the end of it, and then the next pitcher couldn't do it. And it's just, you know, those questions like how many pitches or how many balls does this guy have to throw before you put in a different pitcher. It reminds me of a game a couple of years, like I think it was last year, they left a pitcher in there and they scored like 10 or 11 runs on him in the first inning and then took him out in the second. The guy at the end did great, you know?
Yeah.
Or there was the game where Decker came in and threw and he did better than all the other pitchers did.
So what Sean is referring to is that 14-5 loss last night that the Aces suffered at the hands of Tacoma, which is their eighth straight loss. Tacoma helped by that eight-run performance in the fourth inning. Eight losses in a row, four losses in a row to Tacoma if you go back to their previous series up in Washington. So it's been a little rough, but we got some fun stuff to look forward to this weekend. We have Firework Friday going on tonight.
Yeah, if you don't like fireworks, I mean,
yeah,
you have
who doesn't
to
like
fireworks?
If you don't like fireworks, why don't you just get out of the country? All right,
I'm not going to tell you the two people I know who don't like fireworks.
That might be a little extreme, but I think fireworks are a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're not bad. I mean, they're poppy and they're colorful, and I like the music people put with it. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's true. But not only is it Firework Friday tonight. Really cool story. I love when the Aces do this. They're doing a home run for life ceremony tonight for a man by the name of John Bush, who was a heart attack survivor. And it's a really cool ceremony if you've never got a chance to see it in person. Every member of both teams come out. They line the base path. You get to run around the bases. You know, you get to high five. They're clapping for it. I mean, it's just a really uplifting ceremony to see in person. So if you're going to get out there for tonight for the game, support the Aces, the home run for life ceremony, which I believe will be happening between the top and bottom of the second inning. So you can get out there for that. And then, of course, Firework Friday after the game. And then Country Night tomorrow night. The Country Festival takes place Saturday night.
I think it's like the 10th year, 100th year.
Yeah.
Then there'll be a DJ before game, a lot of cool events happening leading up to the game. And I've seen a little bit of the graphics they've done for that
Ooh.
Major board for that day. So everything looks like it's going to be a lot of fun that day.
And then, of course, your dollar menu Sunday.
And kids run bases, I believe, on Saturday as well.
So a lot of fun. Get out there. Enjoy the Aces. Enjoy everything else. And maybe that energy, that good mojo will help them get a win and break this losing streak. Because 9 is the record. So you would hope they either get a win tonight or get a win on Saturday, because should they lose those two games, it's going to start making a new record, and that's the one record you really don't want to build on.
Right. That's why I'm just going to keep saying I don't know if they're going to win. I don't think they will, because maybe that'll jinx it to get them to win. Because I have that superstition. I was talking to Mr. John Ramey yesterday when he called the Aces game in place for Ryan while Ryan was on the TV, and we talked about this superstitions that I have, and he said, he's like, yeah, I'm kind of superstitious, but when you're here, it's kind of just probability. So when I call out a wild pitch and then it happens, that's not a suspicion or anything jinxing it. I was like, yes, it is. That's not a probability of that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're saying that this guy has 13 wild pitches on the year and then he throws a wild pitch. That's like a jinx luck kind of situation, you know?
That's true.
So I'm going to go with they're going to lose, and let's see if they win.
You know who doesn't need any luck right now, though, because they're playing great? It's the 1868.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming off a strong performance. We talked about it on Monday, that 4-1 win over Sacramento in USL competition. Unfortunately, Reno went right back to Sacramento on Wednesday for a competition in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup competition, and Sacramento got the better of them 1-0 in that one. So unfortunately, after the second round, Reno is out of the U.S. Open Cup competition, but they are still tearing it up in the USL, and tomorrow they will be up in Tacoma to take on the Tacoma Defiance, and that'll be their last game for the rest of the month. I don't know if they'll be off, but they won't have any more games in the month, so there's that. Woo! Everybody caught their breath? Everyone good?
Are you good?
I'm good, man. I'm always good.
That's good.
Fun stuff. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk NBA lottery. We'll also have our bud Ian Epstein from Prop Swap on the phone and a giveaway. So stay tuned for all of that here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Well, one of the more exciting, I guess probably the most exciting lead up to a draft, because the NFL is fun, but it's more about the actual players going and kind of the feel of it, where I feel like the NBA has always set up their draft with the lottery. Like, it's kind of like their hype guy. like before the draft happens, they're gonna send a lottery in there, and he's gonna get on the mic, and he's gonna start screaming in your face, and start yelling all the different names. We got Zion, we got RJ, we got Morin. Like, I feel like the lottery is the hype guy for the NBA draft. So yeah, I feel like that's the way it is. And man, I didn't watch the whole draft, but I caught the last about 15 minutes of it. And it was like right about the time where they started revealing like the top picks and the top. And I remember when New Orleans got revealed as the number one pick, Alvin Gentry, who used to be the Phoenix Suns coach. He's actually a really nice guy. I still like him. He just was kind of put in a tough situation in Phoenix. But he is the coach of New Orleans, and we all know that Anthony Davis wants out of New Orleans. So what's the best thing to do when your star player wants to leave? Draft yourself a new star player. And what's the easiest way to do that? Have the number one pick. So with New Orleans doing that, Gentry stands up. I can't say the word on the air because the FCC, but he stands up, basically yells, F yeah, and kind of turns around to the other owners and is high-fiving other owners that he got the number one pick. So I feel like nobody really sets up their draft better than the NBA. I mean, the NFL, again, just the spectacle of it enough. But, I mean, away from football, no one really sets up their draft the way the NBA does. And whether or not this new format fixes tanking, I'm not too sure that it will, because you still give teams, even if you try to even it out between the bottom three teams that all get 14%, that's still better odds than 4 through 10, even though New Orleans, I think, was 8th or 9th in best chance to get number one pick, and they got it. But I don't think this is necessarily going to deter the idea of tanking, because if you look at the way this draft went, you think, okay, it's better to be in the middle of the pack then, like 7th, 8th, 9th, than try to be very last and bottom of the NBA. You just have to be smarter in the way you tank then. So I'm not sure if it's solving that problem as much as it's going to challenge teams to tank smarter. So instead of just pulling your stars and putting all of your bench players out there just going, hey, it is what it is, we finished 30th, instead you have to go, okay, we're falling too far down the order now. So now we have to play a little bit better. Okay, now we're here. Now we got to start taking. So it's going to just be tougher, I think, for teams to do that, but I don't think it's going to really deter them from wanting to tank. Because if you're in the lottery, it's still a better position to be in than being 12th or 13th and just kind of being stuck in that limbo. So I'm not sure if the new format will help tanking. I'm not sure if it'll help the way that teams go about conducting themselves over an entire season. But I can tell you, I think it's going to help the attendance of the draft lottery. I think more people are going to want to tune in, because even though it's not a major change, I think it's a big enough change to give people hope. I think that's part of what you're looking for in the future of any sport or any sports process, is just hope that it'll get better. I think this year gave those people just that little bit of hope for them to be like, okay, this process might finally be getting better. And I'll tell you, as a Suns fan, I want tanking to be out right now. I don't want to watch my team be awful on purpose. Who would want to watch that? No one would.
So but I'm, you get it.
You do have to. I mean,
but no, I agree. Tanking should be gone regardless. Yeah. It's just doesn't make any sense to
me.
No,
it doesn't.
If you're trying to be the worst team, then obviously your mother was just like, good job. You came in last, but you deserve this medal. It's like, that's what I feel like is happening, you know?
And I agree. I mean, it does seem like we are just in that kind of participation medal type of feel, and that's where tanking kind of comes from. The fact that, hey, we can be awful, we're still going to get rewarded, though. But, again,
it's not life.
It's not life. But, again, this sets up New Orleans to now take Zion Williamson. So I think it might seem like a no-brainer that you draft this guy and you have him, he's yours. What if you drafted him for trade stock?
What if he denied and went back to Duke?
He could. I mean, obviously that's also an option, but everyone around him has said that's not in his plans. Right. His stepdad, people that he's played with, other former players have just said that that's not anything he's considered. I mean, it's an option. He could shock the whole basketball world and be I'm just going to go back to Duke. I think Mike Krzyzewski might have a heart attack from happiness and joy if he heard that. he's coming back for a second year? oh my God. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it sounds like if AD leaves, if that's a for sure done deal thing, if he's pretty much told New Orleans, when I can leave, I'm out of here, then obviously you keep Zion, you build around him, because right now he looks like a star.
Well, he's like he's a 300-pound...
6'6", 272 is what Zion Williamson go as.
Yeah,
but that's still a beast of a human
being. I think he's going to be like the top four biggest
people. He was a freshman in college just now, so he's what, 18, 19? And he's 6'6", 272? I'm 5'11", and I'm anywhere near 272.
I'm not even going to say what I am.
Thinking about a teenager being that big... It frightens me a little bit, to be honest. But just the way he can grow, I think that's what you're really going to look for. Because Anthony Davis, can you get these young guys in there, and the talent is so raw and so ready just to perform, you got to mold it, though. So I feel like if New Orleans can mold Zion, then it's totally worth keeping him and just being like, hey, AD, if you want to stay here with Zion, you can. If not, good luck. We got our new guy. And the way I'll show you the video. I don't know if you've seen it. I'll show you the video of their whole office staff in a little room watching it just flip out when it gets announced. But it's amazing. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And we'll see. Obviously, only time will tell if he becomes a Hall of Famer, if he just kind of becomes a solid player. What if he's a bust, though? If Zion Williamson becomes a bust, that may be the biggest bust in NBA history.
Well, I was thinking about that the other day when I was listening to one of the other talk shows. That's not us. I rarely listen to something that's not us talk, but that was something that they were bringing up too. Like, what if he's a bust? And yeah. I kind of agree. I'm like, you know what? They're making this huge hype about this kid, the kid that ripped out of his shoe or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's huge hype. And then all of a sudden he gets there.
Well, the thing is, he wasn't the number one recruited player either in that Duke class. The top three recruits went to Duke last year, and I think he was two or three, because RJ Barrett, I believe, was the number one high school ranked recruit coming out of that class into Duke. So that means that Zion's pretty much taken that attention away. I mean, I think, you know, it's pretty much a battle between Ja Morant and RJ Barrett to see who's going to go two and three, because those are the three big guys in this draft. But it's become apparent that Zion's taken over. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you think his ranking was coming out of high school or how he played in college. The fact is, he is going to put butts in seats, because people want to see him fly from the free throw line, watch the ball disappear between his hands, and then dunk on some poor 6'7" European dude that thinks he can stop Zion. I mean, good luck. It's going to be like that Olympic game when Vince Carter jumped up on the giant Greek dude.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, it was the 2000 Olympics, and Vince Carter just went sky high on him. But anyway, I mean, only time will tell, and it's all about the odds. It's all about whether or not he'll be able to pay off, or whether it'll be a bust. That all comes down to what happens. And speaking of odds, though, we have our pal Ian Epstein from PropSwap on the phone. Ian, thanks for joining us, man. We were just talking about the lottery, and I mentioned that Alvin Gentry got hyped when New Orleans was released or was revealed to be the number one pick. Were PropSwappers as hyped as Alvin Gentry was?
Yeah, it's funny how much of an excitement the NBA draft turned into. But yeah, the Zion sweepstakes was huge in Vegas, because the Pelicans odds dropped from 200-1 to about 25-1 here in Vegas. So everyone was seeing who's going to get the number one pick. Obviously, everyone was interested to see if he was going to go to New York City. And it was fascinating to see the way it played out. And I think we can officially put behind tanking, because the Pelicans had like the ninth best choice to get the pick. Teams like New York, Cleveland, that had the best chance to get that pick, it's flattened out so much that it really does not incentivize, losing as much anymore.
Hey, if that's how it takes care of tanking, I am okay with that. But that focusing on more of the stars of the future, let's talk more about the stars of the present right now. Golden State and Portland wrapping up game two last night. Golden State mounting a nice comeback there in the fourth quarter. What I know we're still early in this series, but what action has been going on between swappers involving Golden State and Portland?
Yeah, a ton of Portland futures came out of the woodwork when they had beaten Denver in a brutal 7-game series. Portland gave Golden State all they could handle last night, and so haven't seen much Golden State. Golden State obviously has been the favorite the entire year. A couple people did hit the panic button on Golden State after the KD injury, but they seem to be playing loose. They seem to be having fun, and so. No real reason to panic so far if you're a Golden State bettor. That being said, as I like to say, the series doesn't start until a road team wins a game. So Golden State did what they had to do. They held serve on their home court. And so we'll see if Portland can go back home and make it interesting.
And then in the other side of the NBA playoffs in the Eastern Conference, Milwaukee and Toronto just threw one game in that series so far, but Milwaukee also conducting their own comeback against Toronto in that game. What's been the early action between prop swappers on those two teams?
Yeah, as I've talked a bunch before on this show, Milwaukee's been a huge team for us. They were 100-1 to win the championship before the season, and now obviously they're the favorite to come out of the East. So we've been selling tickets left and right on Milwaukee. Here's just one example of a sale. A guy bet $50 at 100-1 before the season, and he sold that ticket on PropSwap before game one for $1,500. So he turned 50 into 1,500, and the buyer has the opportunity to win $5,000. Those are the perfect types of transactions on PropSwap. Because the seller is able to lock in a bunch of money, turn 50 into 1,500, and the buyer is able to get better odds than any sportsbook in the world by buying that ticket.
Wow, that is crazy. I'm interested to know, now that we have a couple rounds of playoffs in the books, when series do switch from one location to another, like in the West with Golden State now going up to Portland, do you see much of a change between prop swappers and who they go towards, or does the location not play that much of a factor?
Well, it's not so much the location as it is like the momentum of the series. So right now, the fact that Golden State's up 2-0 and, you know, Portland's kind of looking down the barrel right now, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to sell if you had Portland, right? I mean, you know, we always talk about buy low, sell high. And so right now, if you had Portland, you'd really be selling low. So I think if you got a Portland ticket, you are just desperately hoping that they can win game three, and then you can sell your ticket for a decent price. I look back to that Golden State-Houston series where Golden State was up 2-0. Everyone had kind of just written that series over. And then Houston won the next two games, evened it up. Obviously, had a great shot to win game five. But the point is that you switch locations, and if you're Ben Portland, you really hope they can pull out a game three. And then I would suggest not risking losing game four and then selling on PropSwap.
And then we transition now to what's happening on the ice. Last night, Boston completing the 4-game sweep of Carolina with a 4-0 win. Were there any massive Carolina tickets being sold there during that game?
Yeah, so as I think I mentioned, we saw one Hurricanes ticket. Guy bet $1,000 at 45-1 odds, and he ended up. But Carolina never – there was a point during game three where they made it close. And again, that game three was pivotal because if they win that, it's right back to, each team holding home court. But once they had lost game three, that pretty much was over for the series. There was no way Carolina was going to come back and win four straight games. Carolina has definitely not been the story. The story has been on the other side of the bracket where I think we talked about the St. Louis Blues. It just has not ceased to amaze me the amount of crazy St. Louis Blues tickets that we've seen come across PropSwap. Just story after story of these small little tickets getting sold for a huge ROI. I mean, it's like I said, it's exactly why we came up with PropSwap. $80 tickets are selling for $1,200. $10 tickets are selling for $600. It's a great story that the St. Louis Blues were the worst team in the league in January, and now have come, roared all the way back to make the Western Conference Finals. However, we talk to these customers who've got these Blues tickets, and they think that, like, they're telling us, like, oh, it's a team of destiny. Like, they have to win. And I tell them, like, this is exactly what we heard from Golden Knights bettors last year, right? It close only gets you so far, right? You're not cashing tickets because you got close. So if you got that Blues ticket and you've made it this far, you know, it'd be very wise to cash out right now before it's too late.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that series continues to evolve with Game 4 happening tonight and the controversial ending to Game 3 there in St. Louis. Let's also talk a little bit about the PGA Championship going on right now. Brooks Koepka, the leader after the first day, 7-under. Is that who prop swappers are leaning towards more, or is there another golfer that they're kind of favoring?
Yeah, so seen a bunch of different PGA Championship tickets change hands. At this very moment, we have over 100 PGA Championship tickets up for sale on PropSwap. So make sure to go to PropSwap.com, download the PropSwap app, and you can check it out. You can have some good deals. Again, every ticket is available to be bid on. Obviously, Brooks Koepka, he's a stud. He definitely started to pull away in day one. But that being said, it's very hard to win wire to wire. So Brooks Koepka, yeah, that's a nice guy that that people have been able to buy low on, sell high. Right now, he's like even money. So if you, let's just say, if you bet $100 on him at 20-1 before the series, you could make 10x on that ticket. I mean, before the tournament. Other interesting guys that we've seen being transacted. Obviously, Tiger has been a name. Tommy Fleetwood is another guy. I'll just pull up one example right now. Tommy Fleetwood, before the tournament, someone bet $28 on a Fleetwood ticket at 35-1, and they just sold that for $125. So, I mean, that's just 4x on your money. It's like hitting a 4-1 shot. So it's, again, golf is a great sport for prop swap because there are so many golfers who can be in the mix, but only one's winning, right? And so the name of the game is making money. And so if you can make a smart selection by getting a guy who's in the mix, you should be rewarded for that selection. And so buying low, selling high. The other thing we always suggest is making multiple tickets, because you might say to yourself, well, you know, hell, that guy with the Tommy Fleetwood ticket, he should just held on to it because he's in, you know, third place and stuck it out and just, you know, gone for that $1,000 to see if it'll win. But if you've got multiple tickets, right, if you've got two tickets that you bet for $28, you can sell one for 4x, and so you're making a profit and then some, and then you still have another ticket to keep some skin in the game. So we call it go for two. We think that, when you're out there, when you're at the window making tickets, make multiple because it just gives you the flexibility to sell if you want.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. The name of the game is to make money, and PropSwap gives you plenty of opportunities to do that. Ian, thank you so much for your time. We always appreciate it. We can't wait to see what all happens this weekend with all the sports, and we can't wait to talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, Spencer.
Always fun to talk to our pal Ian Epstein from PropSwap. And just like PropSwap gives you the chance to win things, we're going to give you a chance to win something right now. Sean, what we got for the people?
We got a chance to win a pair of tickets to see Dokken at the Virginia Street Brewhouse on May 26th, plus a lunch for two from Porter Subs.
Ooh, great deal right there. That goes to caller number 9 right now at 775-333-0945. Playoffs after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Oh boy. So about a couple weeks ago, I sat here in this very chair talking into this very microphone, and I said that after Game 7 of San Jose and Vegas' first round series, that you can say it was a bad call, but Vegas played like garbage during that 5-minute span. Now speaking about the Sharks, after that Game 3 victory in St. Louis, as much as I would love to sit here and bask in that overtime win and say that San Jose is two wins away from going to the Stanley Cup final, I can't sit here and be proud of it because it was obviously a hand pass that set up that game winning. I mean, not the actual pass that set up the goal, but the pass that set up the pass for the goal.
Now, would you say that was more or less along the lines of when all the fighting started breaking out? Maybe it was just like one of those where it happened to be there?
It was definitely during play. It was definitely the fact that he had his stick on the ice. It was kind of tangled up. He couldn't get it to play the puck. So I'm a Sharks fan. We've established this, so I'm going to try and sound like I'm not making excuses. I've already said I'm not going to defend the win. But I think it may have been a situation where he tried to catch it, and he just ended up not being able to do that. But watching the replay, it seems pretty obvious that he just basically open hand smacked that puck. Now, whether or not he was trying to get to a teammate, we'll never know. But the rule clearly states you cannot bat the puck with your hand and then have your teammate be the next one to touch it.
Right.
Because that is a hand pass, and that is what happened. Now, the big hoopla from all this isn't necessarily that the goal occurred. It's that the refs could not review the goal. That's what set everybody up in arms. The fact that a hand pass in that scenario is not a reviewable play if you want to challenge the goal. So that's where the big hoopla came from. That's what sent the city of St. Louis into practically a riot. I'm pretty sure I saw three different Blues players break their sticks by just slamming it against the boards because they were so, which is understandable.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. So then, after Wednesday night's game, San Jose Sharks captain Joe Pavelski had these comments, and I quote, "Everyone keeps talking about the hand pass, so there must have been something there. But at the end of the day, there are calls that go both ways. That's the playoffs," end quote. Now, I agree with the fact that, yes, those calls do happen. Teams can get messed up over by it. We get that. But I think that more applies to rules that happen like right on the line. Like you couldn't tell that it was a penalty until you really just sat down and reviewed it. That was a pretty blatant hand pass regardless. You can see that in real time. I saw the hand pass. The announcers saw the hand pass. The only four people that didn't were the ones that matter, and those are the referees. So whenever something like this happens, the question is, what comes from it, right? There's going to be changes coming to the NFL based on the way how the Rams and Saints NFC Championship game ended. There's going to be rules changing to the Kentucky Derby based on how that race ended.
Basketball is getting more changes added in as well. Yeah. Every sport, I feel like this year is just the year of changes.
Well, the thing is, we live in such a highly reviewed sports world now. You have a camera everywhere now, regardless of what sport you're playing. I mean, cricket has like 8 different cameras covering a cricket game. Why? You don't need that many cameras for cricket.
Have you played cricket?
I actually have.
I was going to say, you do need that many cameras for that.
We live in such a replay-defined sports world now that when you have a play that leads to a goal that cannot be reviewed, especially when you get down to the conference finals, that is going to implement an immediate change. So next year, I imagine that this will be a reviewable play. But here's also my question. Why wouldn't you have that? Why wouldn't you already have a rule that states, regardless of what the call is, if it's a goal, you can review it?
Yeah, anything else.
Yeah, like how you have a rule in place that does not give you the option to review any scoring play, that just seems like someone just missed it.
That seems like something for baseball.
Well, I don't know about that. But either way.
Well, it's like baseball is that one sport that they really don't want to add replays into. It's been hardest one to get replays
That's
into.
True.
So it's pushed to baseball.
That's true. But these type of things always add replay. And that's what's going to come of it. So unfortunately for St. Louis, that's how the game goes. You're down 2-1 in the series now. And for San Jose, they're becoming bothered. I saw this in an article earlier today. They're becoming bothered by people saying they're lucky. Now, I don't know if it's necessarily luck. It might just, I think the Vegas penalty was really stupidity on Vegas. A, just don't cross-check people. I get it. It wasn't super high up on him, but still, you put yourself in that position. And in this case, get the puck out of your zone, and San Jose wouldn't have had the opportunity to even put the goal in there. But bottom line is that if you're St. Louis, regroup, you're still on home ice. It's not like you have to suffer this in game 4 and then go play in St. Louis. So the best thing that the Blues can do today or tonight is just play through every whistle. Don't say anything to the refs. Don't get on your emotional high horse again. If you're St. Louis, tonight is your night to make a statement that Game 3 isn't going to define this series. You can go out there and you can make a stand that, okay, Game 3 happened. We don't agree with it, but we're going to play on and we're going to take game. I mean, if they win Game 4, it's a best of three series. It's that simple. So it comes down to how can the Blues put that behind them and refocus? Because San Jose, whether you want to call them lucky or not, they've got skill on that team. They've got cup potential. So if St. Louis gets too caught up on this and too wrapped around it, San Jose's going to blow right by them. Because San Jose's not thinking twice. They're getting angry that people are calling them lucky. They're getting more amped.
I mean, you think about it, the game went into overtime, so clearly both parties had skill to get to that point, right? So then you're looking at this one play, which, you know, it could be the one play in that Saints game that could have made a difference, that one play. But this isn't that one play that's necessarily making the difference. Like you said, if they win Game 4, it's best of three.
Yeah.
You know, so like you said, get in that mentality. Don't come in pissed off.
Well, and I get it that when you get down to these Final Four teams, or even regardless of the start of the playoffs, we want to see the best teams compete. We want to see the best teams match up against each other. So I understand the frustration that comes from a call like this, where you could argue that maybe the best team that night didn't win because of that missed call. So I can understand the frustration that comes from this kind of situation. But as a player, you got to put it behind you. And I know the St. Louis coaching staff was hopping mad. I think their head coach went down to the referee locker room, was banging on the door. And again, can't repeat what he said to the FCC. But they were not happy in saying the least. But everybody in that locker room has to move on. You can use it as fuel, but you cannot harp on it. Otherwise, you're just going to cost yourself a chance to play for the Stanley Cup. That's the nice thing about a serious game. This didn't happen in a one-off elimination style like in the NFL. You get to come back again. And that's the important thing. Time to give away a second prize. Sean, what we got for the people?
We have a chance to win a pair of tickets to the World Fighting Championship at the Greater Nevada Field on May 31st.
Very cool. They set it up right on home plate, so it's right in the middle of everybody.
I'll be there.
Yeah, it's a great setup. That goes to caller number 9 right now. Again, 775-333-0945. We'll talk about some Indy 500 qualifying notes and headlines, and also take a look at some Preakness Stakes horses right after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. We are on the eve of the second, not the final, but the second jewel of the Triple Crown, the Preakness Stakes, that taking place tomorrow. And the top four horses from the Kentucky Derby will not compete in the Preakness Stakes. Very interesting, big names, obviously out. But some more fun horsing names for the Preakness. Right now, I believe War of Will, 4-1 odds. Might be the leader. Improbable is going off at 5-2. I think the biggest long shot right now is Everfast, which, again, odd name for a horse that's a long shot. Everfast? I feel like it would be, you know, Everfast. Either way, he's
us with our names. Improbable didn't win, so he didn't get changed to Probable.
But Everfast right now going off at 50-1 odds. He's the long shot right now of the group. Signalman is going off at 30-1, as is Market King. But I think my two favorite names from this event probably have to be Laughing Fox. That's a good name. He's going off at 20-1. And then Bourbon War. So I feel like that's what defines like my grandparents' generation.
A bourbon war?
A bourbon war.
Mm.
So either way. But a lot of fun there. And then, of course, Indy 500 qualifying happening this week for the race that takes place next Sunday, the greatest spectacle in motor racing. And a young driver by the name of Patricio Award, if you haven't watched IndyCar, you might not be familiar with him, but he's having a solid season there. He and former Formula One world champion Fernando Alonso both crashing out in practice. Both men were able to walk away from their cars from those crashes, which is always a good thing. But the Indy 500 being such a big event, it's fun to see these kind of crosses of young guys like Patricio Award, who is handling himself in IndyCar and has been in talks with some possible future Formula One seats as well. Mm. And then, of course, Fernando Alonso, a two-time Formula One world champion, the first champion from Spain. So it's interesting to see those kind of guys, those two types of different generations come together at this one event, which is really unlike any other in sports. I said it on Monday. I don't know of any other race that literally has its own weekend just for qualifying. But the fact that literally you don't have to be a full-time IndyCar driver to compete. If you can get a car and sponsors and get it there and drive and qualify for the race, you could be in it. I mean, this is a bit of an exaggeration, but if Sean or I got a car and someone was like, yeah, we'll sponsor you, we could go to Indianapolis and try to qualify for the Indy 500. Probably die, but either way.
I'd be like,
yeah, I'm probably going to hit the wall first time. But
right off the bat.
Yeah, exactly. Not even at, on the warm-up lap even, I'm probably hitting the wall. But either way, it's always fun. Can't wait to see that next weekend. And then we wanted to pass this along before we got off the air. This, I believe it is this, is it this Saturday? No, the 19th. So Sunday. Sunday, May 19th at Eagle Valley Golf Course from 11:45 to 4 p.m. There will be the Fred Alexander Memorial Family Golf Clinic. It's a fun event that provides clubs to kids if they can't get any lunch, t-shirts, backpacks filled with golf goodies, raffles, all this great stuff from 11:45 to 4 p.m. at the Eagle Valley Golf Course. So get there, have fun, enjoy the weekend, enjoy the sports, and we'll talk to you on Monday. Peace.